Saki Vrinda ke, Shishi Pancha Tattva ke, Shri Nrisingadev Bhagavan ke, Ko Premanande, all glories to the Samadavatis, all glories to the Samadavatis, all glories. glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 15, Parashuram, the Lord's Warrior Incarnation. And we're actually to read verse 7 through 10. 10 is all you've bought there. Let me just read the other couple of verses first, and then we'll go on to that in a couple of minutes. So this is verse 7. Ityuktas tanmatam gyatva gata sarvarinam tikam anyadatva tan ashvan upayeme varananam. Translation. When King Gadi made this demand, the great sage, Richika, could understand the king's mind. Therefore he went to the demigod Varuna and brought from him the 1,000 horses that Gadi had demanded. After delivering these horses, the sage married the king's beautiful daughter. Extent. Sarvashi Paritita Patnaya Swashriva Chapatya Kanyaya Shrapa Yitvo Bayar Mantras Charum Snatvagato Muni. Thereafter, Richika Muni's wife and mother in law, each desiring a son, requested the Muni to prepare an oblation. Thus, Richika Muni prepared one oblation for his wife with a Brahman mantra and another for his mother-in-law with a Kshatriya mantra. Then he went out to bathe. Text 9. Tavat Satyavati Mantra Swacharam Yachita Sati Prishta Matva Taya Yachan Matri Matur Adat Swayam. Translation. Meanwhile, because Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for her daughter, Richika's wife, must be better, she asked her daughter for that oblation. Satyavati therefore gave her own oblation to her mother and ate her mother's oblation herself. And actually, there's just a very short purport here. A husband naturally has some affection for his wife. Therefore, Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for Satyavati by the sage Richika must have been better than her own oblation. In Richika's absence, the mother took the better oblation from Satyavati and ate it. Some intrigues. going on. Okay, so now we're up to 10, which is on the board there. You can repeat after me. Tad Vedetva Muni Praha Padmim Ashtam Akarashi Goro Danda Dara Putra Rata Te Brahma Vittama Tadviditva Muni Praha Padmim Kashtam Akarashi Putra Bratate Brahma Vittama Tadviditva Muni Praha Padmin Kashtam Akarashi Goro Danda Dara Putra Brahma Vittama Tadviditva Muni Praha Padmin Kashtam Akarashi. Goro Danda Dara Putra Tate Brahma Vittama
Gaura,
fierce, Dandadara. A great personality who can punish others. Putra, such a son. Brata, brother. Te, your. Brahmavitama, a learned scholar in spiritual science. Translation. When the great sage Ruchika returned home after bathing and understood what had happened in his absence, he said to his wife, Satyavati, "You have done a great wrong. Your son will be a fierce Kshatriya, able to punish everyone. And your brother will be a learned scholar in spiritual science." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A Brahmin is highly qualified when he can control his senses and mind, when he is a learned scholar in spiritual science, and when he is tolerant and forgiving. A Kshatriya, however, is highly qualified when he is fierce in giving punishment to wrongdoers. These qualities are stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verses 42 and 43. Because Satyavati, instead of eating her own oblation, had eaten that which was meant for her mother, she would give birth to a son imbued with the Kshatriya spirit. This was undesirable. The son of a Brahmin is generally expected to become a Brahmin. But if such a son becomes fierce, like a Kshatriya, he is designated according to the description of the four Varanas in Bhagavad Gita. Chaturvarya Maya Shishnam Gunakama Vivagasha. If the son of a Brahmin does not become like a Brahmin, he may be called a Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra, according to his qualifications. The basic principle for dividing society is not a person's birth, but his qualities and actions. Nama Om Vishvaraya Krishna Prasna Kutare Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastuchadi Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajikavatarubhyasya kripa sindhubhya eva cha patitanam bhavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. So just a little bit of background, perhaps for those who haven't been following the classes over the last few days, is that this devotee personality, Ruchika Muni, he decided that he wanted to marry the daughter of a Kshatriya king, Gadi. The daughter was named Satyavati, and apparently she was a very qualified young lady, and this Ruchika Muni, he's a Brahmin, he's a sage, he's that type of person. Somehow he decided, this will be the best thing for me, to marry this particular girl. So he approached the father, King Gadi, and King Gadi, he looked at Ruchika Muni and decided, this person is not suitable. So initially he refused, but then Ruchika Muni was a little persistent, and the king then said, all right, if that's what you want, then what you must do, you must give me 1,000 horses, at least 1,000, each as brilliant as moonshine, and each having one black ear, either right or left. It doesn't say, and I don't know whether he was thinking, he'll never do that, and so I won't have to give my daughter to him. But one way or the other, Ruchika accepted the challenge, and as we read in the first verse, verse 7, that he approached Varuna and somehow obtained from him 1,000 suitable horses. I don't know, Varuna normally lives under the water. Somehow he appears to deal in horses too. Sometimes it's like that, multitasking. One time, many years ago, in Vrindavan, we visited one merchant who was selling nice oils, scent, fragrant oils for deity worship. And we had a look at them, and maybe we bought something or maybe not. And we're about to walk out. He said, wait a minute. I also sell telegraph poles. You know, they put on the street and hang the wires from. I also sell telegraph poles. Do you want a few of them to complement the fragrant oils for the Govardhan Shila? Anyway, these things happen sometimes. So he gave the horses to Gadi, and he received Satyavati. They were married, and then the time came, they wanted to have a child. So therefore, Ruchika Muni himself, as a very qualified Brahmin, knowledgeable in how to get things done by Brahminical means, he prepared an oblation. Srila Vishnava Chakravarti Thakur, in one of his purports to these verses here, he says it was a rice preparation, some sort of rice preparation. Sometimes they use sweet rice, some sort of rice preparation. And over that, Ruchika Muni chanted the suitable mantras to have the effect that when his wife eats that, she will then give birth to a very qualified Brahmin son. As it happened, his mother-in-law, the mother of Satyavati, the wife of King Gadi, she also decided she wanted to have a child. And in order to get some special blessings and mercy to have a very suitable child, she also asked for some oblations. some like specially empowered foodstuffs, empowered by mantra for producing a particular type of childhood. So Ruchika Muni, he gave her also some of that rice preparation, which he had chanted over with mantras for producing a very qualified, powerful Kshatriya son. Yes. And, you know, if you know how to do these things, they work. Nowadays, of course, it's Kali Yuga. And generally, people, they can't do these things, no matter how many mantras they chant. So as we read, the mother, Satyavati's mother, the wife of the Kshatriya king, Gadi, who by Ruchika's arrangement was meant to get the oblations for producing a powerful Kshatriya son, she got this idea that my son-in-law, Ruchika, he's obviously more attached to his wife, my daughter, Satyavati. So probably the mantras he's chanted over her oblations, probably they're better, more powerful, more effective. So let us do a swap. So she did a swap. She asked, actually. It seems Satyavati didn't understand the implications of all these different factors involved. So she agreed, all right, you take my oblations, I'll take yours. And so then they ate those rice preparations. And then Ruchika Muni returned and found out what had happened. And as we read, he said, you have done a great wrong. In other words, he chastised his wife strongly and told her, as a result of all this, your son, who was meant to be a very nice, qualified Brahmin, a gentle person, a knowledgeable person, a renounced person of a very sattvic character. It's okay. Yeah, actually he's going to be a fierce Kshatriya. As the verse says, Goro means fierce, Dandadara, carrying a danda, means a rod of chastisement, not quite the same as the sannyas danda. Putra, yeah, your son's going to be powerful Kshatriya, very fierce, very violent type of person. Shishi Radha Madhavati. And your mother is going to have a nice Brahmin boy. So neither will fit into the respective family. So you just made a terrible mistake. Really bad mistake. So there's that side to the picture here with these verses. And of course in the purport, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes more qualification or just recognition in terms of qualification rather than simply birth. I guess we're going to read over the next so many days who came out as a result, but anyway, well, when Satyavati found out that I'm going to have this like heavy, fierce, violent, aggressive Kshatriya boy. As a child, she appealed to her husband, please do something about it. Can you make a workaround? And Ruchika said, all right, what we'll do then is your son will be a Brahmin, and he was Jamadagni, but his son will be this fierce Kshatriya, and he ends up being Parasaram, who was just super fierce. His program was just destroying and smashing and just killing all the Kshatriyas, so many generations. And the son, who was born of Gadi, the king, and his wife, who's the mother of Satyavati, the mother-in-law of Ruchika, he was Vishvamitra, who's kind of, what would you say, he's a bit on the mixed side, really, but he ends up being a Brahmin in the longer run. Yeah. So this is what happened. And first thing we can note, because it's a bit of a colorful story, we should note that you've got to be very attentive in Krishna consciousness, particularly in chanting, but actually in just everything to do with Krishna consciousness. You have to be very attentive. If you're not attentive enough, if you're trying to do something, but your attention is distracted, it's focused on something else, even just partially, then whatever you're meant to be doing, which you're trying to do, but without proper attention, it's not so likely it's going to work out properly. It's very likely there'll be some problems. And there can be some very serious problems if you're inattentive, and as a result you make a mistake. To make mistakes is one of the four defects of the conditioned souls. Srila Prabhupada talks about this in the beginning of Ishapanishad, the four different defects, and he gives examples of each. And the example he gives of making a mistake, I don't know if any of you can remember it. Yes, Prabhu. Right. Well done. Mahatma Gandhi made a mistake. He made a mistake. Actually, what happened was there was this group of, they were actually Hindu fanatics. They weren't Muslims. They weren't political people. They were Hindus. Staunch Hindu fanatics. And they decided he was too liberal. So they thought we had to assassinate him. So the day before he was assassinated, he was staying at the Birla temple in Delhi. And the assassin, the person who the following day did actually shoot him, the assassin wanted to kill him, but what he did, he came along the alley or the little road next to the temple, and he climbed up. It was a bit of a raised sort of wall or hedge or something. He climbed up to shoot over the top. But someone came along and he panicked. And he dropped the gun and he ran. and the gun was found. So the assumption was, and this was right at the time that every day Gandhi, who was living in the temple there, every day he'd walk across the lawn and attend the prayer session. And so the assumption was, it seemed pretty clear that this was an assassination attempt. So the next day, they told Gandhi, or whenever they told Gandhi, look at this, because they found the gun. Someone wants to assassinate you. So tomorrow morning, don't go to the prayer meeting. Just stay in your rooms. The others can come and join you, and you can do the prayers in your room. But Gandhi decided, no. I'll go to the prayer meeting as usual. And this time, the same fellow, he didn't make a mistake. He just walked right up to him, did pranams, and shot him. And it was good night, Mahatma Gandhi. Yeah. So Prabhupada gives him as an example. He made a mistake. It was, like a silly mistake, actually. If he had thought more carefully, then he could have avoided it at least that day. But he made a mistake. So sometimes mistakes happen, and you pay a price. Sometimes it's just something inconsequential, but sometimes, like Gandhi, you make a mistake, you pay with your life. In this case here, the mother and the daughter, Satyavati, they made a mistake and they paid a price. Things got really mixed up in their family situations. So we, as aspiring devotees, we at least must try our best to do everything very carefully and attentively and not make mistakes, at least as much as possible. I was trying to learn the Russian language some years ago. And there is a word. The word is pisat. It means to write. If you put the emphasis on the first syllable, he's laughing already. If any Russian would know. You put the emphasis on the first syllable, it means to urinate. But in a sort of, what would you say? Oh, I don't know. Childish type of way. Sort of informal. If you can think of the English word we use for urinating when it's just sort of joking around. That's what it means. And I was learning this, but I kept making the mistake of putting the emphasis on the first syllable. And my teacher, oh, he just roared with laughter. It's a mistake. Not a very serious one, but slightly embarrassing. So mistakes. Prabhupada, at least we're told, Prabhupada told a story about a man who made a mistake, or mistakes. He was an Indian in the British time. He was like a clerk, just a lower level bureaucrat type person. But in order to impress people, he had learned a few English words which he would strategically use to try to impress people. And the words he knew were yes, no, and very good. And sometimes he'd just say yes to like an Englishman trying to impress him. So Prabhupada, as we understand, told the story that this man, in his workplace, someone stole some money from the boss, and the police came, and they're interviewing the workers who stole the money. So they came to this man, and he wanted to impress them that he's, you know, a very together fellow who's in tune. So they asked him, "Did you steal the money?" He said, "Yes." In a very positive way. Yes. So they asked, "Will you give it back?" "No." "Well, then we'll have to take you to prison." "Very good." It was a mistake. He didn't know what he was talking about. So sometimes, you know, at least if you're in the habit of making mistakes, sometimes you pay a price. And this was one case. They really paid the price. So there's another interesting example, actually, in the ninth canto at the beginning. It's the story of, who is it, Shraddhadev Manu, who had no sons. And he and his wife, Shraddha, they wanted a son. So their priest was Vasishtha. Everyone's heard of Vasishtha Muni, very famous Brahmin, highly qualified. So they asked him to do a yajna. So he agreed. He organized the yajna, kind of sophisticated yajna with different people doing different things. And there was one priest who was the chief mantra chanter. So Shraddha Devi, the wife, somehow she had the idea, "I would rather have a daughter." So she spoke to the mantra chanter before the yajna and asked him persistently, "Can you please chant mantras so we can have a daughter? Can you please chant that sort of mantra persistently?" And she really kind of worked on him. So he knew that actually this yajna is to produce a son. But as the yajna progressed and the time came for the mantras, the mantra priest, he chanted the mantra for getting a daughter. And as a result, a daughter, Ila, was born. I mean, like, it sounds like on the spot she appeared. Anyway, at least as the result of the yajna, this daughter was born. And when Manu, Shraddhadev, saw this, he was not happy, actually, but he was very perplexed. And he went back to Vasishtha and said, "What happened? You're meant to be the authority on such things. How did we get a daughter?" And Vasishtha understood it was this other Brahmin. He chanted the wrong mantra because he was pressurized by the wife. Somehow it just slipped out of his mouth. And then Vasishtha said, "No problem. I'll change him into a male." So he did that. It's amazing, isn't it? Just like that. And the male was known as Sudyumna. This is all, I think it's the first chapter of the ninth canto. But Sudyumna, you know, when you make mistakes, sometimes you can't just turn things around just like that. Sometimes the implications are much more substantial. So he turned her into this young man, this male, Sudula, who was sort of, you know, pretty. He had kind of feminine features, although it was, the body was now male, but the features were kind of somewhat female. And then later on, if you know the story, when he was out in the forest and he came, I think, to a place where Lord Shiva was having pastimes, and where Lord Shiva wants to be the only male, he was transformed into a female, and all the other people with him. And so now how to deal with that? So then he had to spend 1 month as a female and 1 month as a male. You know, talk about transgender. It's extreme. But when you make mistakes, you've got to be careful, because anything can happen. And just one other example I want to give in regards to making mistakes. And it's a very important and quite famous example from the sixth canto. It's all part of the story of Vritrasura, very famous devotee demon, so to speak. Indra killed the son, Vishvarup, the son of Twashta. And Twashta wanted revenge. So he did a yajna. He didn't just hire the mafia or, you know, start a revolution, gather an army. He did a yajna to produce someone who could kill and who would kill Indra. But when the Brahmins were chanting the mantras, they mispronounced one syllable, not even a whole word, but one syllable. The crucial term in the mantra was Indra Shatro. Indra Shatro means the enemy of Indra, which is sort of a nice way of saying he can kill Indra. Yeah. So Indra Shatra, but they mispronounced it as Indra Shatraho Visarga. Oho. Instead of just Indra Shatro, Indra Shatraho, which completely changes the meaning to that person who Indra is the enemy of, which is a nice way of saying the person who can be killed by Indra. So it's just such a minor mistake when you consider there were many mantras. It's a whole big yajna, many mantras, everything being chanted very precisely and actually perfectly, and one syllable. Actually, Visarga, when the vowel sound is double, sort of double, it counts as half a syllable. Oho. So just a syllable or half a syllable error out of so many done perfectly. And the result was total failure. Complete failure. It wasn't easy for Indra, but he killed Vritrasura. Now that's a long story, very interesting story. But he killed Vritrasura, who was the person born from the yajna, supposedly to kill Indra. He looked like he could do it. He was a gigantic, demoniac-looking person. Although he was actually a devotee because he was Chitraketu. And he maintained the consciousness of Chitraketu. But he looked like a really major demon. When he attacked the army of Indra, all he did initially was just walk through them. And his feet were so big, he was just squashing the soldiers. Anyway, Indra shut Raho. Indra was his enemy. In other words, Indra could kill him and did. It's a mistake. It's just a mistake. Yeah. So, then, of course, in the purport, in the last purport, Srila Prabhupada focuses on this point of how people become born and how people should be recognized and accepted in terms of guna and karma. As Lord Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, what is it, 4.13? I think, 4.13. Chaturvanyam maya srishtam guna karma vibhagasha. Yeah, according, a person should be accepted and the person's nature should be understood in terms of their qualities, their guna, and their karma, the type of work they're naturally attracted to doing, that they want to do, that they can do nicely and in a natural type of way. Of course, guna comes first. Your karma is sort of a display or is based on your guna, your nature. And this is how people should be accepted. Of course, we know in India, or even in a broader sense, just amongst people of Indian origin, that at least, you know, nowadays it's nowhere near as bad or dramatic as it used to be. But it used to be just completely amazing. How people were judged according to birth, regardless of their qualities, totally regardless, and then they're respected in terms of their birth, even though they're just, there's no question of them deserving such respect. And related types of ideas. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the story of Subuddhi. Subuddhi Khan, is it?
Roy.
Subuddhi Roy. Subuddhi Roy. Some Muslims sprinkled some Muslim water on him. Means some water they chanted some of their mantras or whatever they call them. Over, and he just got sprinkled with it. And then even he got into a bit of a flap. And I've become a Muslim. And the Brahmins, the local Brahmins, they all confirmed, yes, you are now a Muslim. He was actually a great devotee. And his consciousness was that of a great devotee. But just because some drops of so-called Muslim water were sprinkled on him, what to speak of he himself, but even these Brahmins, who were meant to know the truth, they all just said, yes, Muslim, sorry, get out of here. Yeah, just get lost. You're not one of us any longer. So he asked them, "What can I do to make up for it?" And they said, "Yes, simple program. We will give you a simple program. We will boil a few liters of ghee. And while it's boiling," and you know, the temperature of ghee, water boils at 100. Ghee boils at, I don't know what, 150 or 200, or it's a lot hotter. Yeah, so when it's boiling, a few liters of ghee, just drink it. Which means you're just going to die, of course. It's no question of surviving. Anyway, he wasn't satisfied. So a little later he approached Lord Chaitanya and asked him what to do. And Lord Chaitanya laughed and said, "Just chant Hare Krishna." And that's what he did. And he was accepted as one of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So yeah, this is a very important point about qualification, actual qualification in terms of actual guna and karma and the nature, the proclivities, tendencies of a person, and not simply according to birth. I'll just finish by telling you one little story from my own experience. We were in Vrindavan many years ago, and we're going to take a trip to Jaipur through Karoli to Darshan of the deities. So we got to Karoli okay. Our driver's name was Panditji. Yes, taxi driver. And he looked like the taxi driver. He didn't look like the Panditji. So Panditji drove us to Karoli first. We got there in one piece. And then after having darshan, we went off to Jaipur on the back road, the sort of the shortcut, through a place called Gangapur. So we came to a crossroads, and there were road signs in Hindi, only in Hindi, pointing this way and that way. And, you know, as it is, I can sort of read Hindi. And I saw, oh yeah, okay, Gangapur, there's the sign, it's that way. So Panditji became a little sort of, didn't quite know what to do. He stopped in front of the road sign. And I told him, "Look, see, Gangapur, that way, see the sign?" And Panditji, he didn't accept it from a white man. He got out of the car and asked someone who was walking by which way to Gangapur. And the man pointed out, "Yeah, that way." So he's Panditji, but he's illiterate. He can't even read his own language. What to speak of being some sort of shastric authority or having some qualification. And that for me was a real classic experience, actually. Poor old Panditji. And I can inform you devotees, you know, that was maybe 15 to 20 years ago. Panditji is still there and he's still driving taxis. So yes, this is such a fundamental point in Krishna consciousness and Vedic culture. But it's interesting to note that Srila Prabhupada, his understanding and his application of this principle was really on a much higher level than his godbrothers, for example, than the Babaji's, even though they're all following Lord Chaitanya in this way or that. But for example, the Babaji's in Radha Kund, when it's time to clean Radha Kund, Only the Babajis, who are from Brahmin families, are allowed to clean Radha Kund and Shama Kund. You know, if you're from some other caste, what to speak of being a whitey, you're not allowed to because, you know, it's just, you're not up to the standard. So this is one of the many great qualifications of Prabhupada, that he saw through this whole caste conscious thing completely onto the transcendental platform, and therefore he was able to be so effective, massively effective, in transforming the world through Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada King. I think it's too late for questions. Next time. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Hare Krishna.